Chapter 11. Other Universes. When Edwin was again tuned into the cold Asian thought frequency in the prescribed manner and at the pre-soft hyphen arranged time, December 90, 1974, he spoke rapidly, "Esa que viendo en hoy que sil de catorviando casao, this is Melka, the satellite on the perimeter of your solar system." The words just rolled off his tongue. To us, it sounded just like Cashendo. So Voldar was not there to keep his appointment with us this evening. "Greetings, my friends. This is Cashendo of Melka here. I am sorry that Voldar cannot make this transmission tonight as he is at a conference on Grandeur. He regrets that he did not advise you of this through your radio and he has asked me to stand in for him. Voldar left a few notes with me and it is from these that I would like to speak to you tonight. We were surprised to bridge the distance of 6,000 million kilometers directly to Melka with a thought transmission. Radio broadcasts from Melka needed the presence of our ship to relay and boost the signal to Edwin's receiver. This mode of communication gave us a foretaste of the possibilities of thought transmissions." Cashendo then added a few thoughts on space travel to those Voldar had given in the previous contact. He said that he hoped to clarify the confusion and misunderstanding on this subject. He said, "As to traveling in time, our living in the future and you living in the past, I would like to stress that we are in your future and you are in our past. Coldus is many Earth years ahead in evolution. If we were to go back in time on Coldus, we would eventually reach the point where your Earth is at present. Many people have asked the question, if we are ahead of you in time, we must know your future. This is not so. Our planet is only more evolved. We have used the word time for convenience, as the era is no word that we know of in your language to describe our concept of space travel. Our craft travel faster than the speed of light by using cosmic magnetic fields. See pictures for better understanding here. Let me tell you more about these magnetic fields. Each planet has its own gravity and magnetic field. In space, there is hardly any gravity, only magnetic force. Earth's magnetic force field is invisible, but if you could see it, it resembles a spherical shape which is drawn out to a long narrow tail by the solar wind coming from your sun. There are currents in magnetic fields, Wikener from a north pole to a south pole. These currents, or lines of force, now in large loops around the planet from pole to pole, cradling the radiation belts which protect life from the solar wind and cosmic rays. There are also currents in the narrow tail field which stretches into space where it joins the magnetic fields of other planets. These tail fields link together into a magnetic web. We travel along strands of this web. Our craft are carried by these magnetic currents. There are two opposing currents in these tail fields separated by a stagnant neutral zone. NB, picture up is not from the coldest book, but fits somehow to the TXT. With our magnetic motors, we are able to attract our craft to the current which will carry us to our desired destination. In the same manner, each solar system has a magnetic field with a tail field deflected even further into space, linking with other solar and star systems. These magnetic fields run throughout your universe, as do as our universes are also connected by a magnetic field. Without this universal solar magnetic field, we could never have visited you in our spacecraft. Yaus, continued Cashendo, a craft move along the outer surface of these magnetic streams, as you would glide on ice, swept along by a stiff breeze. At the start of a journey, we direct our craft into the slower central region of the magnetic stream. To gain more speed, we move outwards until we reach the outermost layers where we attain maximum acceleration and where we dematerialize and travel many times faster than the speed of light. How this is done will not be understood on Earth. Some have suggested that we then exist in another dimension, but this is not so. We are just ahead of you in evolution. We do not differ from you in body. We merely have an advanced technology which you will also evolve to on Earth in your future. Cashendo mentioned that the Confederation had discovered a civilization which is even further ahead than theirs. This advanced civilization exists on planets which Confederation craft cannot reach. When I asked Kashendo to tell us about these beings, he said, "We believe that there is yet another pair of universes, a third and a fourth. The beings that we know of are from the third. Their appearance is very human, but you may consider their features to be oriental. They are tall, muscular, have long hair, and when they speak, their voices have such a high pitch that it hurts one's ears to listen to them. They seldom speak, as they communicate telepathically. I have seen such beings twice, and on both occasions they were males. Their craft can travel much faster than ours. I'm told that they make frequent visits to our mother planet, Granda, the planet in the Confederation where telepathy is most widely practiced. At this moment, Voldaya is attending a conference there where the problems of the Confederation are being discussed, as well as the problems of Earth. A delegation from the Third Universe is usually present at these discussions." Kashenda paused for a few moments before he continued, "I have just been alerted that a Cetonian division of astral craft is approaching this satellite. I shall have to end this thought transmission soon, as I have many things to attend to when the craft arrive. They have traveled far and stop here to rest and replenish their supplies before continuing on their way." Before ending, Kashendo sent his best wishes on behalf of the Confederation for the Christmas and New Year season, which was then approaching. I thanked him and asked when the equivalent season called Nixia Candy in the Confederation would be celebrated. "You have 12 months in your year," Kashendo replied. "Wakal month sides. Waka 15 such sides in a cold Asian year. Our Nixia Candy in the Confederation will be two of your Earth months ahead of now. This is the time we commemorate the advent of the Divine One who walked our worlds. As on Earth, it is for use to a time for contemplation and celebration. We also make merry, and there is much visiting between friends." I asked, "Could you tell us exactly what date on our calendar Nixia Candy would be celebrated?" "It will be the third week in the month of February, 1976. The Confederation celebrates the whole week as Christmas, and every planet in the Confederation joins in. Yes, there is much merrymaking." Kashendo ended the thought transmission saying that our next transmission would be in a month's time, when Volda would be back to talk to us. I made a mental note to do something special for Nixia Candy, which would be representative of our civilization Ofman and Earth. I decided that it would have to include extracts from a musical masterpiece. When Kashendo had gone, it was quiet in the room for a short while. Elizabeth and I looked at Edwin expectantly. When he had returned, we asked him, half jokingly, if he had had a good journey to Melka. He replied, "Cal, it gets more and more vivid. I know exactly where I have been. The last time it was more of a jumble, but this time it was like watching a film screen." I asked Edwin to enlarge upon his experience and how it differed from the visit he had made to Voldar's craft. Edwin said, "This time I was in the communications center where Kashendo was, in a dome right on top of the satellite. Melka is like a small planet, a miniature world. It has many floor levels with observation windows all around it. There are airlocks with huge gates or doors so that visiting craft may enter. It is like an oasis in space. Melka's motto can be seen above the main airlock doors, written in cold Asian, and it means welcome to all." We chatted for another 20 minutes about Melka before I left to drive home. We made a date for a month ahead to keep our appointment with Voldar. As usual, Kashendo's transmission had been very informative. His command of the English language is good, probably due to his extended training period on Earth and having married an Australian girl. He is more fluent and not so repetitive as other communicators. He certainly added to our primitive comprehension of their method of space travel. As the ancient mariners use the trade winds, so the Confederation spacecraft use the magnetic currents of the universe to advantage. These magnetic currents pulse and now continuously in a web of closed loops shaped like a Dumbo, a rather long drawn-out Dumbo, with the two rounded ends linked through the poles of the gravity centers. If an universe's air said to be in the shape of a big cosmic dumbbell, with the magnetic field flowing through the connecting bar. This is where the modern space traveler sails along in the magnetic trade winds without having to use propellants for fuels or expend any other form of energy. Our next contact was with Voldar, and it came just about the time when people on Earth were being alerted about Eros. This uneven and oblong-shaped asteroid approached Earth, tumbling end over end through space on its orbit around our sun. Eros is about the same size as Manhattan, and it takes 21 months to orbit the sun, and closes with our Earth at predictable intervals, with radio and press speculating on the width of safety margins during its passes. "Greetings, my friends," Voldar said in his usual jovial voice. "We are at present approximately halfway between Earth and Venus. We are observing an asteroid which is approaching. I'm sure you have heard of it." I replied that we had read about Eros in the news soft-papers. "The Eros asteroid picture is not from the Calder's book," Voldar continued. "There is no danger of collision with Earth. It will bypass your planet, and so far it has not collided with any other. But who knows, one day when it passes through your solar system it might collide or be intercepted by a planet. At present, there are no obstacles in its path, and it will pass Earth by a large margin. It is good to be speaking through Edwin again. I would like you to relax as much as possible during the Earth transmissions. Concentrate on my voice. Although it is Edwin's voice you are hearing, it is really mine. Eventually, you will receive my thought without any instrument. At this moment, I am seated in an astral craft in space. All around me are stars. It is peaceful and quiet. There is a darkness in space that you have never seen. Each star, each planet, hangs like a jewel in this void of velvet blackness. Try to visualize this scene. As I look through the observation windows, I see your Earth, and as I turn in my seat, I see Venus behind me. It looms a little larger than Earth at the moment. I hope you can imagine this scene in your mind's eye. Voldar hinted at some future catastrophe and the change state incident would bring with it. But he gave no due as to when this cataclysm or cosmic upheaval would take place, as this was unknown even to the scientists of the Confederation. They are certain that it will occur, as they have learned to interpret various signs in their long history of cosmic observations. Voldar said, "The virgin lands where the ancient Atlanteans settled will one day be a haven for mankind again. For after the big change takes place, where there are now oceans, there will be land, and where there is no land, there will be oceans. The continents of America, Africa, Asia and Europe will no longer be there. In their place will be these new lands, now at the polar regions, and civilization will start again. For thinking polar regions will not suffer in this big upheaval. They will remain more or less intact, but the climate will change and the ice caps will melt. On the rest of Earth's surface there will be drastic changes. The present polar regions are even now being prepared, for they will be needed. You may have noticed that there is a lot of UFO activity there." Voldar concluded with a promise to make another contact at the end of the month cycle. He said, "I will be in this vicinity again before returning to Calder's for my rest period." Following these words, Edwin returned to us after a brief interval of silence. He groaned while he opened his eyes. "Oh, my head feels heavy. You know, Cal, I could see Earth. But it was a little hazy, like looking at the sun through a cloud. I could make out some detail, but only dimly. There was a black spot. There may have been a heck of a storm raging there. I could faintly see the land masses and a bluish haze around it. It is a fantastic sight."